Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as a tour of the battle space of the war for the free world. My colleague in such touring is our first guest, Fred Grandy, our co-host here at Secure Freedom Radio and a senior fellow at the Center for Security Policy. Fred Grandy, you are a former member of Congress, and that gives you a special, I think, advantage perhaps in assessing what is going on in the United States Congress at the moment. Specifically, let's talk about the Senate. We had what amounts to, I guess, a filibuster sustained yesterday on the Chuck Hagel nomination. The same day, it would seem that the argument is being made more persuasive than ever that he should not be confirmed, with reports that he thinks the State Department is run by the Israeli Foreign Ministry. What is up with this guy, and will he be confirmed?
Well, first of all, I think the answer to your last question is still yes. I think Republicans may succeed in delaying the procedure, but denying him the actual confirmation, I think, is still not necessarily something that can be accomplished. And I say that, Frank, because many of the senators, including John McCain and Lindsey Graham, who led the charge against Hagel and insisted on more information, have said that after the upcoming recess, the Washington's birthday recess, they will probably allow the vote to go forward. And what we're talking about is getting rid of the filibuster. So at that point, Hagel would not need 60 votes. He would only need 51. But unfortunately, I think what the Republicans, and to some degree the White House, have not banked on is the aggressive zeal that both sides have in this particular fight, particularly for the White House. I would be stunned if they pulled this nomination, particularly after what happened to Susan Rice. I think this is a matter of personal pride. I may be very wrong on this, but I think they would throw Brennan under the bus before they throw Hagel, because the president has handpicked this guy. I think he's established himself as an active cipher for the administration in terms of Pentagon policy, which is exactly what they want. But I also think there's a personal grudge match going on between the leaders of the Senate and the White House over his picks. And I think it's largely exacerbated by the success they had in derailing Susan Rice.
Well, you may well be right on all of that, though it does seem to me, as this speech at Rutgers, just the latest in a series that have trickled out, makes clear, there are powerful grounds for opposing this nomination and seriously challenging his Chuck Hagel's suitability. You mentioned John Brennan, Fred Grandy, and I do want to turn to him next. The vote in the Senate Intelligence Committee on his nomination was postponed. Does that signal to you that he's actually in some trouble, or is this simply just a tactical maneuver?
Well, I think it is largely a tactical maneuver. I'm not sure Democrats are perhaps as skittish about him as some might be about Hagel for the reasons we just got done talking about. But it appears right now that what Republicans are looking for is his perhaps complicity in changing the story out of Benghazi. In other words, rewriting Susan Rice's talking points. And there have been some allegations whispered through the corridors of Congress that it was Brennan who essentially changed the story to use the video that, of course, we know was completely unrelated to these events. How the Republicans are going to get that information, I don't know. But I think what they're trying to do is, to some degree, what they did with Hagel, which is delay long enough so that they can find something that could derail this guy's nomination. As you know, Brennan has had some heat from the left because of his partiality towards drones, but I think at the end of the day, there aren't many senators on the Democratic side that would vote against confirmation because of that.
Yeah, but Fred, one of the things, and we've talked about this for several weeks running, so let me just reprise it. One of the things that is clearly the case, whether they're able to establish that he cooked the books on the talking points that Susan Rice used relentlessly to try to deflect attention from the real problem in Benghazi, namely, I believe, the administration's policies towards these jihadists, rather than some video that they were blaming for the attack. But we do know that John Brennan has cooked the books on this whole phenomenon of jihad and sort of the Islamists who are promoting it, whether through violent means, perhaps less so, but certainly through the more stealthy civilization jihad means. If you were serving in the Senate of the United States today or were advising members of that body, what would you be saying about the need to examine that and particularly the prospect that such a man with these blinders on would be appointed to run our intelligence community or intelligence agency in the CIA, at least?
Well, that's the mystery of our present times in terms of this, the composition of Congress, Frank, because If John Brennan hasn't appeared through his own correspondence back and forth with groups like the Council on American Islamic Relations and others who are asking for these purged files, if he hasn't appeared as a wholly owned subsidiary of these Muslim Brotherhood front groups, I don't know how much more evidence you need. But just as a matter of example, Steve Emerson and I, the Investigative Project on Terrorism, were up on Capitol Hill this week trying to recruit some freshman Republicans who have some positions, not on intelligence, but Homeland Security and foreign affairs, to pay attention to this. And I'm reluctant to tell you this, but their attitude was, well, we got so much other stuff on our plate, one, and two, is there any kind of a PAC involved? Now, I have to tell you, that is a significant difference between when I served in the House and now. It's to me a very sad commentary, but quite honestly, Brennan's coziness with jihadists is not something that enough members are paying attention to, and unfortunately, we know all those members that do pay attention. They take special orders, they raise hell, but nobody seems to be listening to them.
Yeah, it's a ticking time bomb, I'm afraid, Fred Grandy.
You are right.
Let me turn to another time bomb, and this one is set to explode, I'm afraid. You have been following closely, Fred, the sequestration debate on Capitol Hill, such as it is. It now seems as though Republicans are insistent on having these cuts kick in. We're hearing more and more stories out of not only the Defense Department, but from the civil agencies as to what a disaster will prove to be. Do you think, Fred Grandy, knowing Capitol Hill as well as you do, that this is likely to prove to be as much of a liability for Republicans as was the infamous effort to shut down the government back in 1994?
Well, of course, what we're looking at is a very elaborate and high-stakes game of chicken between the White House and Congress right now, principally the Republican House. The Democrats have come up with a budget, finally, which will be totally unacceptable to Republicans, but it will pass the Senate and collide with the House version, which will pass the House, but there will be obviously nothing to come out of any kind of conference committee. I may be wrong about that, but I can't see how what the Democrats have put on the table, which is essentially a new surtax on millionaires coupled with even more defense cuts, that the Republicans would agree to that. So I think what the Republicans have decided, Frank, is that sequestration is the best of all the really bad options. And if they can take their medicine now in terms of these cuts, perhaps they can forestall defense cuts in the future. I think that may be a pipe dream if guys like Hagel get confirmed and Brennan and others. But I have to say right now, from a tactical point of view, that seems to be their best play.
I think it will blow up on them, and unfortunately, we know it will blow up on the United States Armed Forces. We'll be talking more about that in the course of the program with Congressman Mike Turner and others. Fred, finally, let me ask you very quickly. You served on the Ethics Committee in the House of Representatives. Any insights into the travails of the chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, Robert Menendez?
Well, again, Democrats are much better at protecting their own than Republicans, particularly when there's a scandal like this. So Unless, and by the way, the Senate Ethics Committee is a much looser organization than the House Committee, because the Senate is much more of a fraternal organization. They are very reluctant to call their own onto the carpet, even for a situation like Menendez. But at the very least, Frank, I would think this guy should not be gaveling one of the major committees in Congress, in the Senate, while he is under certainly the suspicion of impropriety. Unfortunately, I'm not sure enough of his colleagues will agree with me on that.
Significant impropriety at that. Fred Grandy, thank you very much for your insights as always. It's great to talk with you. We'll look forward to doing so again next week. Next up, we will speak, as I advertised, with Congressman Mike Turner about defense sequestration, much, much more. Straight ahead.
We want to know what you think. Leave your comments at 1-800-332-7131.
Do you see that doggy in the shelter?
Hi, I'm Buddy, that adorable puppy you adopted from the Humane Society.
Meow. I'm Whiskers, a fluffy kitty, just waiting for someone to love me.
When you adopt a pet, we hope your new furry friend will become a cherished member of your family. And as Buddy and Whiskers will tell you, the key to success is following the rules to love by.
Woof, that's right. Please give me food, water, and exercise every day. To stay healthy, I need the same kind of things you need.
Talk to me. I like hearing your voice.
You're my best friend. Please don't stay mad at me or lock me up as punishment. Remember, I'm probably going to live 10 to 15 years, so take care of me when I get old.
One day you'll need someone to take care of you, too.
A message from the Montgomery County Humane Society. Visit www.mchumane.org for the complete rules to love by.
Be your best friend for life.
The first step in winning a war is to know whom you're fighting. 9 years after 9/11, the U.S. security establishment has failed to tell us. The very words we need to describe the war are being outlawed. We went from the war on terror under Bush to the war on man-made disasters under Obama. Neither identifies the threat doctrine behind the aggression, Islamic Sharia law. That's why the Center for Security Policy assembled Team B, an independent group of national security professionals, including Bill Clinton's Director of Central Intelligence, James Woolsey. The result is a book that challenges the assumptions of the current administration and exposes the supremacist nature of Sharia and the jihad its adherents are obliged to engage in. This report names the names of those responsible and makes plain the mortal peril now posed to America's Constitution, our national security, and way of life. For more information, visit shariathethreat.com or order your copy of Sharia, the Threat to America at amazon.com.
Congress doesn't have a budget for 2011, but the GOP has proposed a budget for 2012, and Bill Bennett likes it.
Maybe it helps to have that 2012 in the background, people hearing and seeing Ryan and the Republicans saying we're serious about really cutting the budget
as a backdrop
to this debate about 2011. People make the decision, well, Republicans seem much more serious about this.
Bill Bennett's Morning in America, weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We're joined, as we have the high privilege of being from time to time, by Congressman Mike Turner. He's a man who we consult with great regularity because he's really one of the stand-up guys on Capitol Hill when it comes to matters of national security, and specifically some of the topics of greatest urgency at the moment. And Congressman Turner, you're, of course, serving as the chairman of the House Armed Services Committee, Air Land Subcommittee. You have considerable expertise in strategic forces as well, and I'm going to come to that in a moment. But just give us, if you would, your current reading of what's going on the Hill with respect to this sequestration business. It seems as though it is about to descend upon us. Is that right, and can it yet be avoided?
You know, Frank, I believe that sequestration is going to happen. And as you know, I voted against this mess about 14 months ago because I was afraid we'd be right here, right where we are. And everything that we're hearing, both from the leadership in the House and what we're hearing from the Senate and the inaction that we're having from the administration, certainly has led the Department of Defense to believe that sequestration is happening. This is, you know, a travesty. It's devastating to our men and women in uniform. It certainly sends them the wrong message. It says to them, you know, they're unimportant and that we can gamble with our national security. It's a wrong message to our allies. And this is going to be drastic. This is not like theoretical cuts to future systems. We're, you know, there's an aircraft carrier that's going to be parked. There's planes that are not going to fly. This is very, very, very serious.
One particularly dramatic moment occurred earlier this week, as you know, Congressman Turner, when the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff basically said, if you want us to do what we do, what we have been doing, what you've expected us to do, you can't cut anymore. Is that plea falling on deaf ears? And if you can, specifically, what are Republicans thinking about this? Members of your own caucus who seem now to be accepting or even embracing sequestration.
You know, this is very interesting because I thanked him actually in our hearing for his frankness, because he said not a dollar more if we're to do what we're doing today. If you're going to tell us to do something differently, then, you know, then we can talk about cuts. But in his statement of that, he also then added, and the world isn't getting to be a safer place. So he's you know, signaling that in his opinion, obviously, that he shouldn't be given a scope that is less than what he's doing today. I don't think it's falling on deaf ears. I think people understand the seriousness of this. I think the president doesn't understand the seriousness of this. In his State of the Union, he had the opportunity to show the leadership and say, this is where I'm going to find the savings. This is where we are going to find the cuts. Remember, sequestration was his idea. You know, it came out of the White House with his proposal to raise the debt limit and have a super committee. And then he withdrew from the super committee's deliberations, really causing their ultimate failure. For him now to have no solutions and to no offsets, you know, he stood before, you know, a joint session of Congress, the American public, just this week, and said, "I will not agree to cuts anywhere else in the budget." So, I don't see that the administration is going to turn an about face until those cuts actually start going into place and people see how horrific this is.
Yeah. Do you have a concern, Congressman Mike Turner, that Republicans will be blamed for what happens, kind of akin to the shutdown back in 2004 of the U.S. government? And if so, are you concerned that your own colleagues are contributing to not simply the actual horrific effect this will have on the military, among other parts of the government, but also politically bear the brunt of the cost?
Well, I think there's certainly going to be enough blame to go around. I mean, when the president proposed sequestration, you know, the Senate and the House agreed to it. I voted against it, as you know, and we discussed, because I was afraid that there was not going to be a resolution. There have been a number of bills and vehicles by which this could have been resolved. But the reality is that the Republicans only control the House. They control one-third of the government. And the Republican side, that House that is one-third of the government, has passed three bills that would fix this. The Senate hasn't passed one. The president hasn't put forth one proposal with any detail that could be put in a bill and passed by either House. He's talked generally about what he would like to see. So, I mean, this clearly is a failure of leadership of the other two-thirds of the government because they failed to act at all.
That's a fair point. I hope it will be borne in mind when these really, really severe consequences start coming down. Congressman, as I mentioned, you served with great distinction as the subcommittee chairman on strategic forces. Talk to us about what we're hearing now, that the president has in mind cutting by as much as another third our nuclear deterrent. Is that a problem in your estimation, and can it be prevented?
It is absolutely a problem, and it's incredibly arbitrary. I mean, the president, when he took office, said that he was, he wanted to address the issue of proliferation of nuclear weapons and to reduce the threat of nuclear weapons and wiping them off the face of the earth. He didn't say he wanted to just reduce the United States weapons, and still his focus has been on us. You know, non-proliferation is supposed to be keeping the hands out of the bad guys, not keeping the hands out of the good guys or us. And he has only effectively reduced ours. Now, that there is no way that you can get to the numbers that he is projecting and have the United States safe from our adversaries while others are pursuing nuclear weapons and missile technology that can reach the United States and place the mainland of the United States at risk. North Korea looking to, you know, even having a video where they show a North Korean attack on New York City. You have to understand that, you know, we're no longer in this dynamic of just, you know, the United States and Russia and how many weapons does it take to make certain that we have a stasis between us and a nuclear deterrent. We now have an issue of nuclear deterrence worldwide, both on our behalf and for our allies.
Right. And it may take very different forces and capabilities than what we have right now, requiring modernization and so on, as you understand so well. One quick question on this, because, again, you've studied this closely, Congressman Mike Turner of Ohio. Is it likely, in your judgment, that these sorts of cuts that the president has in mind, either because of the budget or because he's going to reduce our targeting requirements or for whatever other reason, that these will conduce to greater stability around the world and keep the impetus behind non-proliferation, or will it have exactly the opposite effect?
You know, it has to have the opposite effect. And certainly we cite history, but we can actually cite this president's term. During his first term, he immediately sought a compromise with Russia to have a reduction in U.S. nuclear weapons, and it didn't deter Iran or North Korea one iota. You know, these people are still pursuing nuclear weapons and nuclear weapons technology to place the United States at risk. If his theory worked, we'd see it working now. Now, with his State of the Union, he was going to propose in his State of the Union additional cuts and additional initiatives that I understand were downscaled as a result of the fact that North Korea sent him a telegram by a seismic needle of doing a nuclear test the day before. That ought to be a wake-up call to this administration, where they say, wait a minute, our theory that if we have less, others will be deterred, doesn't work. If we have what we need, others will be deterred from using them.
Right. Yeah. So your understanding is that they had actually anticipated unveiling this next round of cuts in the State of the Union address, but it seemed like a poorly timed idea in the wake of that wake-up call, as you say, that the North Koreans sent?
It appears that that's how it happened.
Very interesting. Congressman, let me just ask you about something else you've been addressing yourself to. It's not immediately within your area of responsibility, but it will be your problem if the Senate, that has it in its area of responsibility, fails to block the nomination of Chuck Hagel to be the next Secretary of Defense. You've been outspoken as to why that would be a very bad idea, specifically, I think, in connection, at least in part, with his attitude towards his proclivities, shall we say, about denuclearization of the United States. Give us a quick fill on that, if you would.
Yes, and here, I can't make a prediction as to what's going to occur in the Senate, but I can tell you this, that if you look at what has happened in the confirmation hearings, Senator Hagel has not responded to some very critical questions that go right to his ability to perform as Secretary of Defense. He's made very clear statements that are anti the United States nuclear capability, that are almost pro sequestration, and that certainly appear to be contrary to the administration and certainly our country's policies towards Israel. Those are three things that go right to the heart of the agenda right now at the Department of Defense. And either the administration is changing its policy and is signaling that by picking Senator Hagel, or they're picking someone who is incongruent with what U.S. policy is. And he has not effectively answered those questions. I think some people said that he did so many retractions during his hearing that he even did retractions of retractions. it certainly, there's a number of statements that he's made that I think just really cause concern.
They do indeed, and I appreciate more than I can say you're expressing those concerns on behalf of, I think, hopefully many in the House, and I suspect a growing number in the Senate. We'll watch it closely. We'll look forward to visiting with you again, sir, very soon. Thank you for taking the time today. Next up, former Director of Central Intelligence Jim Woolsey tells us about another debacle of a nomination, that of John Brennan to be the CIA director. Straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
It is with sound mind and body that I, James Fredericks III, after fighting with all direct family members for decades, leave my entire fortune of $32 million to the one friend I had in the end, the package delivery guy, Matt Sanger.
Woohoo! Yeah! I had a feeling about this. I'm rich! Oh, this cannot be happening.
Actually, it's not happening.
What?
And it never will.
I don't get it.
There aren't even people here. That's just one of those murmuring sound effects.
Seriously?
Listen, if you want to have money in your future, don't rely on luck.
Huh.
Put $10 away each month. Cook once in a while instead of eating out.
Okay.
Pay down your high-interest credit cards.
Right.
Small changes today, big bucks tomorrow.
So, no inheritance?
No. Go to feedthepig.org for more free ideas.
Feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
And just to be clear, no inheritance, right?
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Several Senate Republicans yesterday joined the rest of the GOP caucus in opposing a vote on the nomination of Secretary of Defense-designate Chuck Hagel, but announced they would permit such a vote in 10 days' time. In light of the serious and proliferating reasons to block this appointment, such a delay, while welcome, is not good enough. For example, just yesterday, the Washington Free Beacon uncovered one of the speeches that Hagel seems determined to hide from the Senate. In an address at Rutgers University, he reportedly declared that the State Department has become, quote, an adjunct to the Israeli Foreign Minister's Office, unquote. Senators like John McCain and Lindsey Graham must not allow the confirmation of a nominee with a record of unhinged, reckless, and anti-Israel sentiments. Not in 10 days, not ever. This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish uncovers the dark side of revolution in the Middle East and the reason why Muslim countries are unable to dig themselves out of a cycle of revolution, political unrest, and tyranny. The constitutions of many Muslim countries state that Sharia law supersedes all other law, and that is why it has failed in providing a legal and political system where healthy democracy can flourish. In this dynamic, only tyrannical governments can survive. In The Devil We Don't Know, human rights activist and Center for Security Policy fellow Noni Darwish answers the tough questions. Why the Arab Spring won't usher in freedom and democracy or a feminist movement, and how Israel will be threatened by the new wave of Islamism after the so-called Arab Spring. The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish. It's available at Amazon.com.
Okay, I got it.
It's easy to take a day for granted. You and your family are connected by routine, and you stick to it. But what if a disaster strikes without warning? What if life as you know it has completely turned on its head? What if your day's routine is disrupted, and you can't reach your family? Have you planned for that? Before a disaster turns your family's world upside down, it's up to you to be ready. Get a kit, make a plan, be informed today. Learn how at www.ready.gov. Ready.gov. This message brought to you by the Federal Emergency Management Agency and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. We're joined by a man who has served his country with great distinction in a number of administrations, both Democratic and Republican. He personifies, really, what I think of as the best of bipartisan foreign policy. He is Jim Woolsey, former Director of Central Intelligence and Undersecretary of the United States Navy, and now a partner with Lux Capital, a venture capital group, and a consultant to Energy Security Partners. Jim Woolsey, welcome back. It's good to have you with us, sir.
Good to be with you.
Let us visit, first of all, about something that would, I think, be of concern both in light of your involvement with the Central Intelligence Agency back in the Clinton administration, and particularly because you have given so much thought to the problem of Islamism in the world today, and that is the seeming blindness, and I talked with Fred Grandy about this earlier in the program, Jim, of our CIA director-designate, John Brennan, to the nature of jihad as holy war, and to folks who are now actively promoting it in the form of sort of Muslim Brotherhood organizations inside the United States. What are your thoughts?
Well, John Brennan's not alone in this. The many people in the administration, and certainly I think the president,
are of the view that they don't want to talk about or think about or deal with the idea at all that religion, Islam or any other, may have anything to do with violence. And if something happens, like Major Hassan killing 13 of his fellow soldiers several years ago, it's just workplace violence. He went postal. And so they rewrite the report on it in such a way as to take out every reference to Islam or jihad or anything like that, even though the 9/11 report was quite clear on these issues. I think it's just as off-beam to ignore the religiously rooted motivation of jihad and to define it just as self-improvement, which is mentioned once or three or four times that way in Muslim holy writings, but far and away the principal use of the word is religious war or funding religious war. And I think it's as short-sighted and as undercutting of understanding to be so politically correct as not to refer to anything like jihad. Now, Hillary Clinton, in her last statement, used several politically incorrect terms, including jihadis, and we thank her for that. But, you know, if anybody came to you and said there's no link at all between Catholicism and the Inquisition, or between being a Mennonite and cutting off the beards of fellow Mennonites, you'd say, what? And it certainly doesn't mean that all Muslims are jihadis, and it certainly doesn't mean that all people who commit religiously rooted or other fanatically based killings are Muslim. But you can't deal with something without talking about it. And I'm really very sorry that John, who in many ways is an able man, I think, has signed on so fully to this politically correct formulation.
But let me ask you again, as a former director of Central Intelligence, and therefore responsible for the work that very important community is assigned, namely monitoring threats and as objectively as possible analyzing them and relaying the fruits of that analysis to policymakers, does it trouble you that John Brennan has been party to what amount to purging of files of the intelligence community, the military, the law enforcement community, the FBI, and so on, lest it speak accurately, in fact, in many cases at least, about this connection between this jihadist aspect of Sharia and the threat we're facing today?
Well, sure, it's troubling. I mean, it's very hard to advise people and understand what's going on without understanding their motivations. And if the government from the White House on down is operating under the principle that you can't talk about that and can't talk about jihadism, it's very crippling to the understanding. I mean,
and therefore, presumably, to what you do about the problem.
Yeah,
well.
I mean, in intelligence, often you have to have a public stance on something that is considerably less complete than things that you know about, because the things that you know about, if disclosed, may damage sources and methods. So it's not always wrong to give only a partial public statement of something and leave other things out in the intelligence business. I think it's a rather different thing in other parts of the government, and I don't think you can sustain a effective program of dealing with the jihadis without understanding that they're jihadis and calling them jihadis.
For starters, Jim Woolsey, let me ask you a different question that's not unrelated to that. You mentioned Hillary Clinton and her shot on the way out the door about this jihadist threat. Hillary, as you know, has been involved for some time, Jim, in an effort known as the Istanbul process. And you've, in one of your previous many pro bono publico activities, were chairman of Freedom House, an organization committed to freedom and particularly understanding the importance, as you do, of freedom of expression. Does this process, Jim, that seems to have at its core accommodating demands by these jihadis of either the violent or stealthy kind, the Organization of Islamic Cooperation most especially, for what amount to Sharia blasphemy laws in our country, trouble you? And if so, does this seem to you to rise to the kind of thing that ought to be a much more focused subject of conversation in our political community?
It's certainly troubling. And many of the same people who take the position that you cannot say anything about the religious roots of even direct violence that kills civilians and women and children and so forth, like 9/11, that any stance that says that is almost always completely hypocritical, because they will never recognize the religious roots of those violence and that violence, and they claim that they are the subject of discrimination, and they will stand there and make extremely anti-Semitic statements, such as Qaradawi on Al Jazeera, and then complain if anyone even remotely suggests that some bit of violence like Major Hassan may have been stimulated by religious beliefs. I think it's really quite hypocritical, many of these statements.
It is indeed. And troubling that it is seemingly making as much headway as it is in accomplishing its goal of suppressing our freedom of expression. Lastly, Jim Woolsey, you've served as, under our old boss Ronald Reagan, an arms control negotiator. You've spent many years in various other capacities tracking and trying to assure the effectiveness of our nuclear deterrent. Would you talk a little bit about Global Zero, an initiative that Chuck Hagel, the candidate to be the Secretary of Defense, has espoused, its advisability, inadvisability, and implications?
Well, the idea that the world can go to zero nuclear weapons is one that has been espoused, even in some cases quite vague terms, even by people like Sam Nunn and Henry Kissinger and George Shultz, and people that I admire a great deal. They normally don't take that position in a extremely, in a sense of saying it's coming, it's going to happen. They view it as a very, very long time, a long-term dream. I would say that for anybody who wants to be halfway practical about such a goal, they ought to admit that having the world be at zero nuclear weapons except for one or two or three or four states like Iran and North Korea and China that would hide a few gives them power over the rest of the world that is just completely unacceptable. The way I put it to them often is that they need a prior dream. The prior dream was a dream of Franklin and Theodore Roosevelt's and Churchill's. They had this poem on the walls of their offices. It's by Alfred Lord Tennyson. It's called Locksley Hall, and the last four lines are, "Till the war drums sound no longer and the battle flags are furled in the parliament of man, the veteran of the world." Now, that's a beautiful dream, too, and I would suggest that has to happen first, and I think it'll take a long time.
It sure will.
But that has to happen first before you could even reasonably talk about zero nuclear weapons.
Amen. Jim Woolsey, we have to let it go at that. Thank you so much for your time and your considerable service, past, present, and continuing, to our country. We'll look forward to talking with you again soon.
Next up, Bill Gertz talks about President Obama entrusting cyber war to the Department of Homeland Security. Straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
This hurricane season, coastal residents in the Southeast and the Gulf states are urged to prepare for the uncertain conditions they may encounter in the aftermath of a major storm and make their annual contingency plans. In addition to other emergency essentials, the American Red Cross and the U.S. Department of Homeland Security recommend residents keep a diversified emergency wallet that includes cash and traveler's checks. American Express traveler's checks provide an extra measure of financial safety and security. Keeping traveler's checks and a supply of cash in small bills offers storm victims payment options to make necessary purchases. Traveler's checks never expire, providing a secure payment method whenever emergencies occur, this year and in the future. Unlike cash, they're refundable if lost or stolen. American Express traveler's checks are available at banks, credit unions, and American Express Travel Service locations across the Gulf Coast and Southeast regions. For more information, please visit www.americanexpress.com/travelerschecks.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have held the same mirror for 13 years.
I have been decorated with purple dinosaurs, baseball teams, and football helmets.
I have witnessed 33 Thanksgiving dinners and one wedding proposal.
I have tiny notches marking the growth of three children.
I have caused a learning disability.
I am the reason that a fifth grader simply can't sit still.
I am responsible for a five-year-old's rage.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home is built before 1978, your family could be at risk. Let's make all kids lead-free kids. Log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
I am the reason a child has trouble hearing.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Is Nancy Pelosi looking to a higher power to get a balanced budget? Hugh Hewitt sets her straight.
When I hear you speak about this issue, of course, it's the Gospel of Matthew. When I was hungry, you gave me to eat and listen to the
Gospel. I just got
to
stop here. Nancy Pelosi quoting the Gospel of Matthew, as though that's got anything to do with the government. Let me just tell you, it doesn't.
Can I get an amen?
The Hugh Hewitt Show, weeknights from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone. At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here, just like they did over there. So now, I'm never alone. I can get the resources I need and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill,
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home, or meeting people you can share stories with,
you'll find it at IAVA.org.
Even if it's just everyday stuff.
Like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say that?
Really?
What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We've got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom, it's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. We're joined, as we have the privilege of being each week, by Bill Gertz. He is the senior editor at the Washington Free Beacon. He also is the author of Inside the Ring, must reading at the Washington Times, and a contributor both through this vehicle and many, many others to really our understanding of what is happening both here in the United States and around the world that will bear upon your national security. And Bill, it's good to have you with us. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Frank. Good to be on the program.
Let's start with some reporting you've been doing on cyber threats, Bill. Comments from everybody from the President of the United States and the State of the Union address to Leon Panetta and his presumably final press conference and Cyber Command seem to be raising a really urgent alarm. What's the latest that prompts that, and is it well-placed, this alarm?
The Obama administration is finally coming around to realizing that we're basically in a low-level covert war, facing attacks from China, Russia, Iran, and numerous elements. And the government, unfortunately, is still not well-structured to deal with it. And what has triggered the latest information is that the president signed a presidential directive. It's pretty weak. and it gives the DHS, the Department of Homeland Security, the lead in trying to coordinate intergovernment responses to the attacks on infrastructure. That is water, power grids, financial, transportation. All of those sectors are highly vulnerable. The head of the U.S. Cyber Command, General Keith Alexander, who's also dual-hatted as a director of the National Security Agency, said that the threats are real and growing and that our infrastructure is weak and needs to be hardened. Unfortunately, the new directive seems to cut out the people in government who have the best expertise to do that kind of hardening, which is Cyber Command and NSA.
Mm. And Bill, you know, Leon Panetta put a fairly fine point on this the other day in talking about the possibility of a Pearl Harbor kind of attack of devastating proportions on our electrical grid and therefore on our society. Is cyber warfare now really at a point where that is a distinct possibility? And do you think that the Department of Homeland Security has anything like the chops to address it?
No, they don't. Definitely, we are facing a catastrophic attack. I think that's been fairly, the alarm has been sounded fairly often and frequently on that. Again, the DHS, it doesn't have the expertise. This is a kind of a bloated bureaucracy that, you know, is doing some border type fence mending security functions a little bit better. But as far as the task for dealing with cyber threats, this is a real, real problem, and they're not well suited to deal with it.
We hope that there will be others brought to bear, including those in the private sector who actually, as you know, Bill Gertz, control most of this infrastructure and who have to be part of the solution if there is to be one. But I very much agree with you that those in Cyber Command and the like who understand the warfare bit of this have to be a central part of it. Speaking of warriors, Bill, you of course know that the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Martin Dempsey, has sort of thrown down the gauntlet to the Congress with a statement to the effect that if you want us to continue to do the job we've been doing, you can't take another dollar out of it. And yet, as we were talking about with Fred Grandy earlier in the program, it seems as though Republicans, not least, are now poised to insist that we take another $500 billion out of the defense program. Your latest thinking on the implications of that bill and whether it will be staved off?
Yeah, testimony this week by General Dempsey was very revealing in one aspect. He did, in fact, state that not one other single dollar can be cut from defense without causing a major retrenchment in U.S. military forces, both strategically as well as force posture and structure. What that indicates to me is that this is the first sign of some daylight between Dempsey's position, the military chiefs, and the White House. The president last weekend went on the radio and said, we need to do another deal like that which was done in December and signed into law January 1st. And that deal basically said we're going to delay sequester and we're going to raise money by raising taxes and we're going to cut spending. We're going to cut defense spending by 25% of that and 25% from domestic. So that's the formula. Congressional analysis of that indicates that if that were codified in kind of long-term legislation, we're talking about an additional $250 billion in cuts. And I think that's what Dempsey was addressing. He said, look, we can't do it anymore. We'll have to make a major restructuring if we have to cut further.
Yeah, and that I think that key point is really the one we need to dwell on is, are we, in fact, going to be able to play the role in the world that we have? Are we going to be able to protect our interests around the world as we have? Will we be able to safeguard our allies around the world as we have? Or are we essentially now relinquishing that in favor of heavens knows what? It won't be a vacuum long unfilled, I'm afraid. Bill, one of the particular places we expect that vacuum to be filled is by the Chinese. And there's been a sanctioning of some of their companies yet again in connection with weapons of mass destruction and delivery system proliferation. Tell us what's up with that, and specifically, if you would, the connection between the Chinese and North Korea, in the sense that there's a growing threat out of that quarter as well.
Well, yeah, the Obama administration slapped sanctions on a number of entities this week. It was done in a quiet kind of way, and they're really actually symbolic or toothless sanctions. But for the purposes of public education, it's important to highlight the fact that several Chinese companies are engaged in missile proliferation to Iran, Syria, and North Korea, and yet nothing is being done about it. I think that's really the takeaway from the story that I did in the Free Beacon on this. As far as China and North Korea, the Chinese are clearly playing a double game. After the recent North Korean nuclear test, the Chinese made a kind of a fake show of anger, called in the North Korean ambassador. But really, China's military in particular is supporting the North Koreans. They're not doing anything to try and pressure North Korea into not conducting these kinds of provocative actions, the nuclear test and the missile test.
Mm. And this has prompted, you've been reporting, Bill, on an exclusive basis, I believe, on the part of the Pentagon, a heightened stance of concern about what the North Koreans are up to. What's going on with that?
Yeah, this was an important story. The Pentagon's joint staff is engaged in an urgent assessment of the mobile ICBM threat from North Korea. Something has happened that has triggered this assessment. It was ordered shortly before the nuclear test this week, and basically they're looking at a new system called the KN-08. This is a road mobile ICBM that was really boosted by the transfer illegally under UN sanctions of a Chinese transporter erector launcher. This missile was displayed by the North Koreans last April, and now it's close to being operational, and it poses a new direct threat to the United States, and the Pentagon has spun up about it, and they're doing a threat assessment on it.
There's been some talk, Bill Gertzen, very quick on this, that there might have been a transfer of a Chinese missile as well. Is that the missile we think we're seeing on that tell?
Well, the technology is not clear. The North Koreans have kept it under wrap, but almost certainly the Chinese have provided valuable missile technology to China, and they've gotten away with it.
Yeah. And again, folks, this is coming against the backdrop of President Obama's determined effort, as we talked about with Jim Woolsey a moment ago, to denuclearize the United States as a sort of catalyst to denuclearizing the rest of the world. It ain't going to happen. And the question is, how much further down this road do we go before the president and the Congress hopefully recognize that this is really a mug's game? Bill Gertz, we have to let you go with that. I appreciate, as always, your analysis on so many of these issues, Bill, at the Washington Free Beacon and, of course, at the Washington Times Inside the Ring column. You render a true public service with your analysis and your sharing of it with us. Keep it up. We'll look forward to talking with you again next week.
Thank you.
And we'll look forward to talking to the rest of you again next week, same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.